Hey marketers, if you want to get the latest news, trends, and insights in marketing, advertising, and tech, check out the Adweek Podcast Network. Learn from leading voices across media and marketing with original shows like Yeah, That's Probably an Ad, Marketing Vanguard, and Tech Magic with Kathy Hackle. Start listening now by searching Adweek wherever you listen to podcasts.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/generate to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/generate. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Welcome to this special episode of Yeah, That's Probably an Ad. I'm Ko Im, your community editor, and this week is a really special one. We have some inspiring guests in our room with us as it is Black History Month, and as we continue these important conversations about race, racial injustice, social justice, within our marketing and advertising communities. So I'd like to introduce Jason Rosario, who is Chief Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion at BBDO Worldwide, Gabby Royale, Director of Global Diversity and Inclusion at Abercrombie & Fitch Company, and Jasmine Cruz, Brand Manager at BBHLA and Head of Marketing and Brand Strategy at In Her Shoes Movement. Thank you so much, guys, for being with me today.
Thank you for having
us. Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, excited to chat.
Absolutely. So before we kind of dive deeply into the conversation, let's start with Jason. Tell us more about kind of what you do and what you're trying to do.
such a broad question. I'll try my best to answer it as succinctly as possible. But I think I'm a jack of many trades, but specifically at BBDO, my remit is to lead global diversity efforts across the network on an enterprise level. And so what that means is my job is to figure out how we might be able to apply inclusive principles to every aspect of the organization, from recruiting and retention and partnering with HR on kind of core cultural diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, all the way through to how do we create more inclusive, representative client output, and how do we advise our clients to think through these lenses, if you will. So broadly speaking, that's my role. Outside of that, I'm an advocate for masculinity and mental health. I launched an agency called The Lives of Men, which uses the conversation around modern masculinity to explore how it has implications on diversity, equity, and inclusion, allyship, and the intersection of those conversations and mental health. So that is as succinctly as I can put it.
Yes, it's a lot. And thank you for all that you do in the various spaces that you're a part of. What about you, Gabby? Where are you at with this new gig in terms of what you're trying to do within ANF?
Yeah, so I've been a diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging practitioner for the last 10 years. And really this new juncture with ANF has been really, really exciting. You know, as we had discussed, really the more fascinating part to me in having an opportunity to lead this effort goes beyond just diversity as a practitioner. For me, it's really all the other parts that keep me up at night, the parts that would influence candidates or employees, associates to want to stay within an organization. So it's really around the side of the house that deals more with inclusion, creating more equitable workforce, building that sense of cultural belonging in an organization. And that means that our focus can't just be on diversity for the sake of checking boxes. But my job really is rather to try and influence and create the type of environment where employees, associates feel that they can bring their full selves to work each and every day, and creating a more accessible and equitable workforce. And in addition to that, I mean, you know, Abercrombie & Fitch, it's a really, really interesting time to work in the space where our mission has really been dedicated to amplifying, engaging, empowering folks from all different backgrounds and really fostering an open environment where folks can come together, listen, learn, and really take action. So move from conversations toward action and influencing the products that we're creating to reflect our global customer. So it's been really fascinating. You know, I started my career in higher education, working at NYU and Columbia, then pivoted to Citigroup, leading our diversity inclusion efforts for early career talent, and then transitioning to the fashion industry, which is really, really exciting opportunity to make an impact and create product that has the opportunity to create social change right across our communities in a really interesting way.
Yeah, I have so many questions about kind of what you all have seen so far. But first, Jasmine, how do you include that DEI lens as somebody who's, you know, on the agency side and also trying to, you know, achieve more equity in the greater world?
Yeah. First, I'm just so excited to be part of this conversation and hearing from Jason, Gabby, amongst inspiring folks. So I think as an account manager, really partnering with clients, and but also partnering with leadership in how we infuse diversity, equity, and inclusion, not just from an internal perspective, but so that it emanates within how we partner with clients. We just ensuring that, yes, we're being responsible and that brands are being responsible, but also figuring out what we can do to not just check the box, like Gabby said, but actually make tangible change. And so I think for me personally, it's just something that I've always been passionate about, which led me to being part of the In Her Shoes movement, a nonprofit based here in LA. And so I have this unique intersection where I get to see what does social impact look like from a grassroots point of view, but then also in my day job, like how can we partner with clients in doing this great work and continuing this great work, especially with brands that want to create change.
Yeah, absolutely. But wanting to create change from that passion professional standpoint, I just want to recognize it is a lot of emotional work. So thank you. I know it's your job, but would it be fair to say that you come across resistance every day? I mean, it's like you're fighting an uphill battle, right? It sounds like an obvious question, but like what keeps you going and where are we at right now? You know, if we had to even rate of how much more work we have to do everywhere. I mean, it just seems insurmountable. So do you take kind of small steps or how does that thinking work? How do you think about how to affect change rather? What's your thought process?
That's a difficult question to answer in a linear way because there's so many different inputs that go into change making, as it were. I think one of the components I would say is modeling behavior. So if, you know, to Gabby's point about driving equity and cultural transformation, part of that, for me at least, is to model the type of behavior that I'd like to see permeate throughout the organization. So if it's vulnerability, as an example, is me as a leader demonstrating that vulnerability to the extent that I can at the organizational level. So whether it's, you know, I made a mistake, I misspoke, I sent an email that was, you know, that had a bunch of typos, whatever it might be, it's really demonstrating that I am, as a human being, before I am a leader, able to recognize that fact. And then that hopefully empowers other individuals to, you know, to be themselves and to kind of let their hair down and be kind of just human, right? So that's one factor of driving change is modeling behavior. The other part of it is accountability. You know, we are all in the business of, at the end of the day, changing the long-term makeup of our organizations through recruitment and retention and other mechanisms. And so how do we do that unless we measure our progress and our goals and hold ourselves accountable to either meeting those goals or not? And so I think accountability starts at the top with leadership. As we set goals and as we put in place programming to try to achieve those goals, to the extent that we're successful, that's great. But to the extent that we're not, in those instances, are we holding ourselves accountable to why we weren't successful? And are we having the right conversations? And then the last thing of kind of what I'm choosing to share now, because again, there's so many inputs, is this idea of incentivizing the right things. You know, when you look at corporate spaces, they're so capitalist and they're so masculine driven in terms of the ideologies that we incentivize, whether it's the bottom line, whether it's, you know, cost cutting, right? It's very linear things or frameworks. I think we need to think about the organization in a much more fluid way, right? And incentivize things like collaboration and teamwork and openness and communication. And I think those values are just as important as all of the other things that we measure success by. And I think taken together, some of those frameworks of thinking, if you will, can help to start to change and transform an organization over time.
Yeah, Jasmine, would you agree with that, given that you know you are having meetings with clients? What kind of strategies and conversations have worked for you to push that forward?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I mean, number one, just modeling behavior. And I think as Ko, you mentioned at the start, this is emotional work and it's hard. And I think we can't just ignore the fact that it's hard and that it is emotional. And so the more that we really just lean into our humanity and embrace just who we are and recognize that we cannot move the needle forward unless we are embracing who we are and our identity, but also creating the space for other people to show up as they are, then we cannot move the needle forward. And so I guess as we're having meetings with clients or as I talk with partners with my nonprofit, it's really being able to show up in the space of like, we're all on the same team. We all want to do this great work. We all want to see change. And it's going to be hard, but we're here for each other and we have to be open to the process and open to the challenges that really come along the way. And just being able to have those vulnerable conversations is just so important. So being able to just show up, be transparent, call out when it's hard, call out when we mess up. But then equally showing grace to others when we mess up, because we're really trying to show up intentionally as strong allies.
Yeah, I don't know why, but I just thought about like, what would HR think about, you know, when listening to this conversation? But Gabby, you mentioned that you, you know, wanted to work on retention, and you had also worked with people who are early on in their careers. What were some of the common missteps from that you were hearing from the company sides? And also, what were some tips that you would have shared, or what kind of behaviors would you have modeled for them? You know, I imagine somebody who's early on doesn't want to speak up or doesn't want to, you know, maybe is scared to admit any kind of mistakes. I mean, obviously, leadership comes from the top, but you know, what can you share with us from that perspective?
Yeah, from the perspective of supporting early career talent, particularly in other roles that I've held, I think that it's always important to provide some students or people that are early on in their career, like, what are the kind of the red flags that you should sort of look for? So beyond this performative allyship component that some companies have, especially during the times, right? Last year was a really, really difficult time, especially for the BIPOC community, right? And so we're looking at companies and we want to make sure that folks are holding themselves accountable to push further, and that it's not performative. And so some of the watch outs I'd say would be, right, or organizations, do they really have a strategy in place? Do they go beyond just changing a profile picture or a headline, right, without any type of monetary investment or action? Do they have partners that hold their organization accountable or receiving any kind of external consultation? Is it the type of environment where a person coming into an organization would be fearful of retaliation and expressing how the environment makes them feel, right? So you want to be part of a speak-up culture, which is something I'm really proud that Abercrombie & Fitch has and we've cultivated. So those types of things are kind of watch-outs that I often share with folks who are at the early part of their careers to kind of look out for. In addition to the watch outs, it's kind of like, well, what else are companies doing to go above and beyond? Are there associate resource groups or employee resource groups or networks who are going to be your champions when you get there, right? And all of that really, really rich insight can really inform a person's decision as to whether or not they would want to go into an organization and stay. And also, is the organization preparing them, you know, are there activations or programs of volunteerism or opportunities for professional development, particularly for folks who might be underrepresented in those communities, to feel a sense of belonging. So I think it goes beyond diversity, and we want to talk about how to create more equity and how to create that sense of belonging within organizations that we represent.
Yeah. You know, last Juneteenth, Gabby, you wrote a piece for us on Adweek, and you had recommended people observe, listen, cut the act, and celebrate. Now, 6 months or so later, have you seen things get better? You know, you speak about speak up culture, but there's also cancel culture. Where are your greatest challenges, but where are you also seeing progress?
I think some of the greatest challenges that we're seeing industry-wide is really like, where do we go from here, right? So there were a lot of organizations that were kind of reactionary, and it would come across to either clients, customers, or even prospective talent as performative, as I said. But where do we go from here? And something that I like to talk about often is that allyship is an always on 365, you know, lifelong commitment to rallying for change and standing unapologetically with communities that you may not be part of. And so to me, that means that it doesn't just mean that there's a moment where we're going to observe, Juneteenth, right? It's going to be an always-on effort to continue to look in the mirror as a company, go through that exercise of self-reflection. As an organization, are we going to aim higher? Are we going to push further? Are we going to push our boundaries and really show up for communities in ways that we haven't before, right? And it's about being a vocal change agent, and really that precedent has to come down from, you know, from your leadership and cascade across your organization. And really, while an organization is looking in the mirror and going through that exercise of self-reflection, are they willing to step into spaces where they have historically felt uncomfortable? Right. So becoming more comfortable with being uncomfortable and really holding hands and walking through that journey boldly to say that we don't want to be who we were yesterday. We're someone different today. These are the steps. These are investments. These are the resources, the tools, the accountability levers that we are pulling to create an impact and create a long lasting, sustained change across our organization.
Well, I agree with what Gabby said in terms of accountability and coming out of the summer months that we just had in 2020, you saw a wave of initiatives, whether 600 Rising and others, kind of surface, holding agencies accountable to some of the things that we're working towards, right? Greater representation in our industry. And the thing about accountability and data and metrics is that it's a measurement, right? It's backward looking in the sense that all it is evidence of where you are, perhaps evidence of where you've fallen short, but it really doesn't do much in terms of moving the conversation forward and affecting change in a forward looking manner. And so I think we oftentimes as an industry get caught up in the representation numbers, right? And not focus enough on the importance of how you use that information to inform your strategy going forward. So I think accountability and data and metrics go hand in hand. I just think we need to pay closer attention to the ways in which we use data and not kind of use it as a check the box mechanism and more direction and use it more directionally to actually move the conversation forward.
Yeah. And, you know, people can't argue with data, but it's important, absolutely, to think about how to best frame that data. Jasmine, how have you been bringing in any insights and in terms of framing it to the conversations that you're having?
Yeah, I completely agree. It's great to have data. Data is important, but we can't be fully reliant on data, or else we risk just having very transactional efforts when the goal is to be more transformational. And so while data certainly has a role in how we track and measure our growth over time, it's really being able to dive deeper into the data, in the qualitative data specifically, and understanding what is the experience behind these numbers. Why are our numbers like this? I think especially when you're talking from a retention standpoint, you can certainly have diversity, but not inclusion. And that can certainly inform what your retention is going to be. And if you're constantly losing people of color or the BIPOC community, you really have to look into why is that? What is the experience of someone who is marginalized within our organization? Are we upholding allyship values? Are we creating a space where they feel like they belong?
Yeah, and that they feel heard.
Can I just add to that, Co?
Of course.
So we often forget that this work, and when I say this work, diversity, equity, and inclusion work is fundamentally about people and about how they engage, how they're empowered to succeed inside of your organization, and then how they learn, connect, and grow with each other. And that fundamentally, when you distill the work down to its core, is what it's about. And so I think, yes, data is an important piece of that. Measurement is an important piece of that to the accountability conversation. But we can't forget that the data has to be accompanied with human insights. And together, all of that then should help inform strategy and the work, right? So I think we're all saying the same thing, but we just can't forget that there's a human element to this work that is fundamental.
Any further thoughts on that, Gabby?
I mean, I would just echo everything that that's been said. I think that it's very, very important that we are approaching diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging work in a way that includes data to inform decisions that we're making, and that cuts across, again, our recruitment processes, talent management processes. It's an important lever that we have to continue to pull to hold ourselves accountable, to continue to push further, to ignite the change that we hope to see across our organizations.
Yeah, and I'm curious for any of you, who do you see doing this work well? Which brands are being actually inclusive? Are there any kind of role models that you all look up to? Or are you, you know, really trying to figure this out along the way, given, you know, the different dynamics that we're all in? Or is nobody doing it well?
Well, could I just comment? I mean, I'll say that there are a lot of really inspiring organizations that are doing it really well. There are opportunities for all of our industries to push further. I think that the fact that a role or roles like ours exist still says that there's a ton of work to be done across all of our industries, right? So when our roles don't have to exist anymore, then we'll know that significant progress and change has happened.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, like, this is one of the more difficult conversations I've had to moderate, because as much as so much of it is obvious and is common sense, a lot of it does seem kind of complicated and complex. So I want to give you all the platform. What's something that you you know, I know we're all kind of well-spoken and at times maybe soft-spoken on a Friday afternoon, but what's something that right now you would really want to shout from the rooftops, like, in terms of the intensity and the passion behind the work and the messaging?
I'll jump in, and I just want to build on the last point that Gabby said, which is, well, no, I'll backtrack. Let me answer your question directly because I don't want to get into all of that. But what I would say is that just a few months ago, about a year ago, companies across industries were divesting from diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, completely divesting from them. And usually that's the case when you look at when things turn downward in the economy and revenues are contracting, usually the first thing that goes is the diversity work. And then all of a sudden, George Floyd happens, Breonna Taylor happens, and then it literally was a V-curve, right? All of a sudden, brands, companies across industries had to react to that moment. And it first began with the public sentiment of support and solidarity. And then you saw this wave of hires like myself, and I'm putting myself in front of that because I know I'm a product of that wave, to hire diversity officers, directors, professionals to help lead this work. And so your question is, what do I want to challenge the industry to consider? Consider the fact that this work isn't cyclical. Consider the fact that this is fundamental to the way that you do business. And then it shouldn't be a function or a product of whether or not you're performing well as a company, right? Obviously, we know all of the, we've read all the McKinsey reports of the world that say that diversity is good for business, of course. But that usually looks at the internal makeup of an organization in terms of diversity of thought, belonging, having different minds and different identities in the room. But it spends very little time, those reports spend very little time quantifying the value of having those diverse voices from a revenue standpoint. And I think that is hopefully that's part of the work that we all have to do. And that is to prove that concept out more. So that's my call out to these spaces. It's to the industries is stop looking at diversity as kind of the cyclical nice thing to do when things are great. It should be something that you do as part of your day-to-day business, like you do marketing, like you do finance. Everybody in an organization should care about costs and revenue, but you still have a CFO. Everybody in your organization should care about your brand's image and marketing, but you still have a CMO, right? Same thing with diversity. Everybody should care about equity and representation, but you still have a CDO or someone that's leading this work. And I think it's important for us to really give it its gravity. And I think that's the one thing that there's still work to be done around, but I do have some hope that, as Gabby said, we are all sitting in these seats in large part because they need us. And we just have to make sure that we quantify it such that they need us at all times, not just during times of crisis.
Go ahead, Gabby.
Well, I was just going to say that, hey, I completely agree. I think one thing I'd like to call out is that, you know, one challenge I have for all organizations really is for it to be more embedded into all of our processes, all of our functions, all of our behaviors as an organization, and to take that with us as a North Star that's guiding all of our businesses, right? And it's not just D&I sitting in some corner, D&I practitioners doing their work, and it's like diversity, equity, inclusion's work, but it's everyone's work. Everyone has something at stake here, and it absolutely impacts business, right? So, yeah, I mean, I completely agree and just kind of echoing what's been said here. But I think that it needs to absolutely be embedded in all of our processes across every single organization and company, and using that model and not just perhaps some, you know, HR person or some team that's kind of like doing all of that work. But it's really, really embedded into the culture and the values and literally the bones and DNA of an organization.
Yeah, for sure. And Jason, you also have a greater call out in our magazine this week about male allyship in action. Could you speak a little bit more about what people should understand about that. Earlier, you referenced, you know, kind of the masculinity standards in our industry. How are you trying to challenge that?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, when you look at our industry, and I'm sure everyone in the advertising space has seen or is familiar with the Mad Men show, right? This depiction of patriarchal, kind of historical beginnings and the foundation of the advertising industry rooted in patriarchy and misogyny, et cetera. And so for me, as someone who's done and continues to do men's work, this idea of bringing that work around healthy masculinity and debunking some of the norms that we're all so used to is important. And I see that as complementary to diversity, equity, and inclusion work through allyship, because in an environment, in spaces, and this is not just within advertising and marketing, but across multiple industries, when you look at male-dominated spaces, if we're wanting to be more inclusive, and if we're wanting to create spaces where underrepresented groups feel like they belong, what would that look like if men led the way, right? What would it look like if men used our privilege or spent our privilege more responsibly to create and to advocate for underrepresented groups? How different would our industries look? And so to me, that's what I mean by that. There's an opportunity here for those of us who are in power, who identify as men, who have the privilege and the power to influence organizations. I think there is an incredible opportunity for us to spend our privilege on behalf of underrepresented groups in that way. And I think that's where those two worlds to me converge. And how ironic would it be for us to transform the marketing and advertising industry in that way, coming from the Mad Men era, right? So I think in my article, I mentioned that we have an opportunity to rewrite this script. And I do, I'm very passionate about that. And so I'm trying to do my part in that. And I encourage other men who might be in similar positions to interrogate that for themselves and see how they might be able to show up as better allies.
Absolutely. And Jasmine, in your case with In Her Shoes movement, you know, what are we telling the Peggy's and the Janes of today? How are we framing that messaging? What are we calling them to do?
Ah, yes. A call to action to the industry, and from an In Her Shoes movement perspective, is ask yourself what does this community need? Whether you're part of the community, whether you're not part of the community, really sitting with what does this community need and what does support look like? So before we are quick to react with sharing more Instagram stories or posts about different stats or just about our anger, I'd really challenge everyone to take a moment to stop and question, what can I do in this moment to support the community in a tangible way? By donating? Is that by partnering with organizations and giving them the platform? Or is that using my brand as a way to highlight underrepresented communities?
And what about specifically with women in our industry? Any message that, you know, you're helping craft?
Yes, for women in the industry, I think it's very much like continue fighting on, continue pushing on. Jason, I love the perspective that you bring for how men can really show up as leaders. I think as women, we want to really encourage that by women stepping up and taking charge. This is not the intention is not to take the voice away from another. The goal is not to replace men in the industry, but how can we work with strong men and strong folks in leadership to be able to champion the work that we're trying to do? So for women specifically, I think just continue fighting on, but give yourself the grace that sometimes sometimes we need to take a pause. Sometimes we need to take a step back. I think with the pandemic happening and, you know, a lot of women hitting unemployment the most, I think it's questioning this balance of what does life and work balance look like, especially when a lot of women within the space had to, you know, leave the industry in order to take care of their families. And I think I saw an article when the pandemic hit of the pandemic is setting the feminist movement backwards. But I think it's actually what the pandemic has actually done is it's just magnified how we've always seen feminism, and it's magnified how performative we've been pushing this movement along, and really magnifying the fact that we can be doing more and we should be doing more. I hope that answers your question.
Absolutely, yes. So I do want to take a pause there. I hope that this is giving our listeners a chance to reflect, wrap their heads around this, and you know, continue to fight in our own ways and to support our various communities. But I want to give anyone last thoughts that they have on this topic. This is just the beginning. This is just a continuation of many, many important conversations that are happening at a larger level, on a one-to-one level. So I do want to thank you, Gabby, Jason, and Jasmine, for your time and offer any kind of last thoughts here.
Yeah, no, thank you for having us, Ko. And I just want to add something that is not on its surface related to the topic of diversity, equity, and inclusion, but I think it's very much related. And that is, you know, it's just, we just need to change. And this is more of a humanity kind of more esoteric, spiritual comment that I want to leave you all with. But we need to change our approach and our mindset from one of lack to one of abundance. And I think Jasmine just kind of mentioned it, right, where this isn't about advocating for underrepresented groups, women, our LGBTQ siblings, veterans, differently abled folks. This isn't about advocating for some of those groups at the expense of another. This is about expanding the pie for everyone. And I think if we can approach this work in that way, I think that is such a powerful place to be and a powerful position to take. And I know that that's a fundamental, probably existential question for a lot of us, right? It's, you know, this idea of abundance. We keep hearing it a lot in this new age of spirituality, but I do think that it applies to this work because that's what, you know, when you see folks storming the Capitol, a lot of those folks are storming the Capitol because they feel like there's something being taken away from them. And I think that's that same concept of, you know, why don't we make more progress when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion and belonging? And that is because oftentimes within our organizations and our industries, one group feels like they have to sacrifice for the benefit of another. And I think it's just a fundamental shift in mindset that we have to have. And that is, let's look at this from a place of abundance, that if we grow the pie, then there's so much more for all of us to win, as opposed to this kind of zero sum game.
Absolutely. And as someone who is proudly part of that new age movement. But there is some form of reframing the narrative that is out there, reframing our own narratives, reclaiming those narratives, and breaking through those limiting beliefs that we have around ourselves and our communities that are thrust upon us. So I want to thank you for bringing that point up. Gabby or Jasmine, thank you all. Any last comments or final says?
Yeah, I mean, Jason, I love what you're talking about. It's not a but or an or, it's an and, right? This really creates this opportunity for all of our communities who understand oppression, who understand racism, to come together so we can collaborate as a community. So it's really not one group or another. It's us coming together as people. And the one thing that I will leave any listeners who are championing diversity, equity, and inclusion, or being the change agents within your organization, within your family, within your home life. The one thing I do want to say that I'm actually still learning, especially within this week of just the emotional hard times that the world is seeing, is it's also okay to not expect yourself to be the one, be the only one holding the torch every single day of every single minute. That we have a community for a reason. We're all running the same race towards the same goal. And that it cannot be sustainable if you're pushing and pushing and pushing every second of every single day, to just be able to, yes, champion the charge, but also give yourself the space to rest, because that's how we can create sustainable activism in whatever space we're in. So wherever you are, however you are, whoever you are, whatever you are, you're just know that you are exactly where you need to be. Whatever challenges or frustrations that you're feeling is exactly where you need to be in this fight for change.
For sure. Gabby.
Yeah. And I guess the last thing here is, I mean, really, we all have something at stake here. We're all involved. This is a movement. It's not just a moment, right? Whether we want to be or not, we should all be championing unity, championing justice, and championing peace. So I hope that across all of our industries, we can walk with more courage, more boldly, and more unapologetically toward the change that we hope to ignite across our companies.
Well, let's end that there. I want to thank Lane, our recording and producer and editor. Music is by Home. David Greiner will be back next week. Again, thank you to all of our guests and to all of you who are listening and doing the good work, whatever it is. And we hope that you can subscribe to us, leave us a review, come chat with us about this issue and more. For Adweek, I'm Co-Im. We'll see you next week.